You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Happy Throwback Tuesday to all of our listeners. Whether it's your first time listening to the podcast or you're a regular listener, we're glad to have you tuning in. Jam-packed show, as always, coming your way. We're going to be talking with a former Seahawks legend in the third quarter, catching up with where he's at this point, and, of course, talking some draft prospects for the Clemson Tigers, and we'll be looking at past successful draft picks on day three in the John Schneider era. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's officially April 20th. Free agency opened more than a month ago, and KJ Wright is still a free agent. Rob, I think you and I both went into this process believing that there was a really good chance that KJ Wright was going to have to wait this out for a little while because he is going to be 32 years old soon. He was moved to the Sam linebacker position, wasn't playing off ball anymore for most of the 2020 season, has had some injuries in the past. And so there were plenty of reasons why teams might not be throwing big bucks at him in the first few days of free agency. But I don't think either one of us expected that we'd be more than a month into the process and KJ Wright would be unsigned.
Yeah, I am surprised by that, Corbin. I thought that there was a strong possibility that the Seattle would be making the re-signing of KJ Wright one of their top priorities. I certainly thought that there would be another NFL team or several NFL teams out there that frankly just opened their eyes and watched the tape and saw that regardless of what age KJ Wright might be, that he was playing an incredibly high level of football the last couple of years. And the fact that he has shown his positional versatility, to me, I would have thought that would have made it that much more intriguing to clubs. Now, that said, this is a good draft of off-ball linebackers. But again, the fact that KJ Wright played as much as he did at the line of scrimmage this year, and while there are a lot of linebackers in this college draft that can turn and run and do things like that, there's very few who can set the edge that way the KJ Wright can do. So I am surprised that he has not yet been brought back by Seattle or signed with somebody else, just because of the fact that he is a really good, durable player.
And we've talked about this a few times. I think that KJ Wright, you can make a strong argument. Obviously, he's had a fantastic career since being drafted in the fourth round in 2011, has had a lot of stellar seasons while Seattle's made deep playoff runs, was a key member of their two Super Bowl squads in 2013 and 2014. But I think when you look back at the last two seasons, they've arguably been the two most productive years of his career. In 2019, he had over 130 tackles, set a career high in that category, had a bunch of passes defensed, picked off a few passes. And then this last season, his tackle numbers were down, but he was the only player in the NFL with double-digit passes defensed and double-digit tackles for loss. And oh, by the way, because he was playing more on the line of scrimmage at the Sam linebacker spot, they were blitzing him a little bit more. He got in a little bit on the action as a pass rusher. And I've got to believe that that might be something that he's going to be doing more as he continues to age. I think that's something that he can still do at a very high level. We could see KJ Wright get a 4 or 5 sack season during the later stages of his career, because that's going to play to his remaining strengths. And you mentioned that his ability to set the edge, that is what really, I'm not going to say it shocked me, but I expected he'd be solid at the Sam linebacker spot, but teams could not run outside. And you remember 2019 when he was still playing weak side linebacker and they had Michael Kendricks, Cody Barton as a rookie playing that position. And teams had great success running jet sweeps and running quarterback option plays to the outside, running pitch plays. It was a major problem for the Seahawks run defense. But with KJ Wright playing that spot, teams were not able to do that. The Rams in particular were not able to get that jet sweep game going, which had been so instrumental to their offensive success against the Seahawks in recent years. They were not able to do that in any of the three games that they played the Seahawks last year. And the big reason for that is KJ Wright. So I've been saying it all along, the longer that he lasts in free agency, the better chance that he's coming back to Seattle. I have now reached the point where I still believe that, but I do find it a little strange that we are now 20th of April and the Seahawks really, there hasn't been any movement on that front, reconnecting them with KJ Wright. Now maybe both these two sides are still talking and Wright's just waiting out the market a little bit. Maybe he's decided, you know what? I'm not going to sign with anybody till the draft gets over with. There's a lot of variables to consider here, but I am surprised that he's been available this long. And the fact the Seahawks now have over $7 million in cap space, I thought by this point we would see these two sides connect and make something work, and it hasn't happened. Maybe it still will. Maybe it happens after the draft, but it is a bit perplexing. It's an odd situation in an odd offseason.
Yeah, no question about it. And to me, one of the interesting things is we've seen Seattle rebuild their defensive line. And, you know, one of the topics that we talked about a little bit was as Seattle tried to rebuild their defensive line, is that a statement about their lack of confidence with some of the younger defensive linemen that they've drafted in recent years? To me, this might be a statement of confidence with Daryl Taylor, because, of course, Daryl Taylor had played outside linebacker previously at the University of Tennessee, and maybe the Seahawks are envisioning him as being that strong side linebacker of the future. Now, while I am absolutely on board with that, I think that Taylor absolutely can play that role. At the same time, I think that KJ Wright has demonstrated over and over again that he is a absolute star at the linebacker position for Seattle. And it's only because of the fact that Bobby Wagner gets so much attention and Wright deserved gets that attention, but still I think that when you look at KJ Wright, his size, his arm length, his athletic ability, his mind, his toughness, all of those traits are things that to me are what has made him one of the best Seahawks during this entire tenure. And we're going to talk in the next quarter, Corbin, about some of the great picks that Seattle has made on day three. I don't know that there's very many of them that have been any better than that fourth round selection, number 99 overall, that Pete Carroll and John Schneider made when they selected KJ Wright out of Mississippi State, so all the way back, in the year 2010.
The other thing that can't be understated is his leadership in the locker room and on the field. He has truly been one of the leaders of this football team for a decade. Every year he's been in Seattle, even when he came in early as a rookie and played a bunch of games, he gradually took on a leadership role. He is naturally taken to that. And so a very underrated player. And we've talked about it time and time again, at some point there's going to be a split. Maybe it's when KJ Wright retires. Maybe it's now and another team comes in. He had talked to the Cowboys. There's been a few other teams that have been linked to him up to this point, but right now he's still a free agent, doesn't seem to be in a rush. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. Maybe the Seahawks will re-enter that discussion. Discussions may be ongoing. Maybe something's imminent. We don't know at this point. When we return in the second quarter, as Rob mentioned, we are going to be looking at some of Seattle's best day three selections under John Schneider for Throwback Tuesday. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Locked On Podcast Network is covering the NFL draft from all angles. Catch up on the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by Odyssey. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and the Draft Dudes podcast for the latest draft news, and stay tuned for more info about our live NFL draft coverage. We are now less than a week and a half away from the 2021 NFL Draft. Only a couple of Throwback Tuesdays remaining until we get to the real deal. Up to this point, Rob, we've talked about the best first round picks, the best day two selections, so second and third rounders. Now we're going to look at day three, and this is where championship teams are really built. Fourth through the seventh round. How many times do we see Super Bowl championship teams that have big time contributors that were drafted in the later rounds every single year. Those guys are the backbone of your roster. And that has not been an exception with the Seahawks throughout the John Schneider era. Let's start with a fourth round and a player that we just talked about for quite some time. He's third on the franchise's all-time tackles list. And I'm going to say this right now. You know, I'd love to say that there's competition here, but KJ Wright is head and shoulders above every other fourth round pick that has been made by Schneider and his scouting department. And I think you can make a strong argument it's the weakest round for John Schneider during his tenure. They have had very few hits in the fourth round, but the one big hit that they had, KJ Wright, hasn't been a Hall of Famer, but he's definitely been in that Hall of Great category. One of the best linebackers, most underrated linebackers of his era.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And everything you just said there, as far as how underrated he is, as far as him being head and shoulders above all the other fourth round selections that the Seahawks have made during the Schneider Carroll era, as well as the fact that the fourth round has essentially been a little bit of a graveyard for the Seahawks over the last decade or so. I mean, you look at KJ Wright and then, you know, some of the other, quality players that Seattle has drafted would be maybe Robert Turbin, the running back in 2012. Kevin Pierre-Louis would have been really interested to see what he might have been able to do if he had not struggled with injuries as much during his time in Seattle, although he has had some success elsewhere. The same thing there with Mark Glowinski, a guard that has had some success with the Indianapolis Colts. So I think that he deserves a little bit more credit from a National Football League perspective than he does in Seattle. But otherwise, I think that you got to come back to one of the recent picks and Ugo Amadi, who I'm intrigued by as far as being a nickel corner. But still, when you're comparing a Ugo Amadi and as much talent as I think that he has and as excited I am about his future to a player that I think deserves legitimate consideration to be in the Ring of Honor with the Seahawks and KJ Wright. Yeah, I think that it's pretty easy to see who Seattle's best fourth round selection has been during the current Seahawks regime.
Now, the fifth round, that's a little bit more complicated because John Schneider's had a couple of really big hits in that round that were key components of the Legion of Boom secondary. First in 2010, Cam Bam Bam Chancellor being selected out of Virginia Tech. Still hard to believe a player of that size and that talent fell all the way to the fifth round, but that's where the Seahawks were able to get him. He was just a totally different body type than we had seen at the safety position. And obviously, multiple Pro Bowls, multiple All-Pro selections, the enforcer of Seattle's secondary. And then Richard Sherman, one year later, was picked in the fifth round, and he held a chip on his shoulder throughout his NFL career, wondering why he was picked that late in the draft, fell midway through day three, ended up being a perennial All-Pro selection, a future Hall of Famer at the cornerback position. So Schneider was able to get these two players in back-to-back drafts in the fifth round, two of the biggest gems in this generation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just, you know, arguably Hall of Fame players, both of them. I mean, just redefine the positions, really, when you think about it. I mean, with Cam Chancellor and his size, I mean, everybody can remember, you know, just the impact that he made. It seemed like the bigger the game, the better he played. And so I specifically kind of remember the Super Bowl, of course, where he was just, creating havoc at the middle and basically intimidated the Denver Broncos. They didn't look like they wanted to play on the same field with him. And then Richard Sherman, I mean, just, you know, the reason why everybody kind of gushes about these cornerbacks with Seattle with a 32-inch arms and the ball skills is because what number 25 used to do out there. I mean, just an absolutely fantastic player. And again, the Legion of Boom is what it is because of those two players. Earl Thomas is a terrific player in his own right, of course. But at the same time, I think that when you think about the big plays that were made in Seahawks history in the defensive backfield, at least during this era, then I think that you're talking about two of those fifth round picks and Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor.
We're going to stay in the secondary for the sixth round. And like the fourth round, Seattle has not had a ton of success finding talented players. And our listeners have to understand, the later you get into the draft, it's much more difficult. You can find talented players, but it's much more difficult to find quality starters and even quality reserves when you get into the sixth and seventh round. There are certainly outliers that are exceptions to the rule, but more of these players are going to end up not being in the league within a year or two than become long-term contributors. And so Seattle hasn't had a ton of success in the sixth round, but they did find another cornerback in Byron Maxwell coming out of Clemson. It's still amazing to me that he had 20 plus bench press reps. He has the most bench press reps by any corner drafted by the Seahawks in the John Schneider era. So incredibly strong for as lean and lanky as he was with those long arms. And he used those long arms to an advantage in press coverage. One of the masters at forcing out fumbles too. It felt like every game he was punching a fumble out of a receiver's hands. And he turned from a guy that early in his career was playing primarily special teams into a key cog in that secondary during their 2013 and 2014 runs to the Super Bowl. Came back, had one last stint with the Seahawks in 2017 where he had an interception, but ended up having a really solid NFL career. Didn't live up to his contract with the Eagles or the Dolphins after he left in free agency, but ended up having a really good career for a sixth-round pick. And another example of the Seahawks' ability to be able to draft corners late and develop them into quality NFL defenders.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that about the defensive backs and the success that Seattle has had on day three with that position specifically. I would agree. I think that he is the best sixth round pick of this regime. At the same time, I give a tip of the cap to the center, Joey Hunt. I know that he did not wind up becoming, as good of a player, obviously has not generated as much attention from other clubs as Byron Maxwell did. But at the same time, obviously was a starter for Seattle and has moved on and enjoyed some success elsewhere also. And then I also would mention Seattle's last sixth round pick, Freddie Swain. If Seattle does not prioritize a wide receiver in this draft class, Corbin, because they clearly have not focused a lot of attention in free agency at the wide receiver position, then that would be a testament to how much the Seahawks are excited about Freddie Swain. So he is one to watch from the last couple of years as a sixth round pick that could have a real high upside that the Seahawks are excited about.
Yeah, we do this a few years from now. Freddie Swain very easily could be on this list, considering he had a better rookie season than I anticipated with 13 catches, a couple of touchdown receptions, and he could be a much bigger part of the offense moving into 2021. Last but not least, the seventh round. It's interesting because we've looked at the fourth and the sixth round. Those rounds, there's been a couple of players that have panned out, but the seventh round has actually been a better round for the Seahawks in the last 11 years than the fourth or the sixth. And it's been almost on par with the fifth in terms of yielding key contributors. I don't think you've had Hall of Fame talents in the seventh round, but you've got a number of players that could qualify as the best seventh round pick. Chris Carson recently re-signing certainly could be considered for that. David Moore, coming out of a Division II school, put up pretty good numbers the last couple of years for a seventh round pick. But I'm going to go with a player from that much celebrated 2012 draft class, J.R. Sweezy, seventh round pick out of North Carolina State. And what makes his story all the more remarkable, as we've documented several times on this podcast, he entered the league as a defensive tackle. That's the position he played in college. And Tom Cable decided, we're going to move you to the offensive line. He became a guard, got some starts his rookie season, and by 2013, he was a full-time starter in the offensive line. He has now started 104 games in his NFL career. He had a few injuries with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He missed the entire 2016 season, but he's been relatively healthy since then. He's played at least 13 games in each of the past four seasons with the Buccaneers, coming back to the Seahawks for a year and then two more years with the Cardinals. This guy has played eight seasons in the NFL, and while he hasn't been a Pro Bowl caliber player, he has been a consistent mid-level guard, and getting that kind of value, especially for a player that changed positions coming into the NFL, that's a home run seventh round selection.
No, it really is. And, Corbin, you and I have been doing the podcast here for a couple of years now. It's very rare that you surprise me, but here it is that, you as the former running back are going to be focusing in not on the running back, but instead on J.R. Sweezy. I love it because I agree with you. I think that he does not get enough credit from Seahawks fans. Tom Cable does not get enough credit for J.R. Sweezy's development because that was very much a Tom Cable pushed selection there. And so I think that both of them do deserves some credit here. But at the same time, I'm also going to come back because Chris Carson is just a special player. I think that, you know, anybody who's been watching the Seahawks and what they've been able to do the last couple of years can just see that this is a potentially dominant back, a Pro Bowl caliber back. That's why Seattle brought in him. I'm excited to talk to LaVon Kirkland from Clemson here in our third quarter about Travis Etienne, the running back that they have, that because Etienne made such a huge improvement in his hands out of the backfield. And to me, that is the exact thing that Chris Carson has done with Seattle that I am stunned by. Anybody who watched him in college could see his power, could see the ferocity with which he runs. But how he has become a true three-down back is exactly why Seattle made it a priority to get number 32 back on the field for them.
With Carson re-signing on a two-year deal, there's a very good chance when we revisit this in the next couple of years that he might indeed be the consensus best seventh-round pick the Seahawks have made in the seventh round. As you just mentioned, we're going to be chatting with LaVon Kirkland, one of the members of the 90s all-decade team. He did spend one season with the Seahawks. He's now the co-host of the Believe on Clemson football podcast. So we're going to be chatting with him about his NFL career, what he's doing now, and of course, several Clemson prospects that might be targets for the Seahawks in the 2021 NFL draft. You will not want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Today through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason Lockenfora, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team are making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 in the new Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's AUDACY. We're fired up to have one of the best linebackers from the 1990s joining us on today's podcast. A two-time All-Pro selection, played in two Pro Bowls, racked up over 1,000 tackles in 11 NFL seasons with the Steelers, Seahawks, and Eagles. Now currently the host of the Believe in Clemson football podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Happy to give a warm welcome to one of Clemson's finest in LaVon Kirkland. Thanks for jumping on the show with us, LaVon. Looking forward to talking some football and the upcoming NFL draft.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
You obviously only played one season in Seattle, but another impressive season on your resume, 101 tackles, couple forced fumbles that season. What do you remember most about your time playing with the Seahawks? And looking at the success they've had over the last decade, how much fun would it have been for you to have the chance to play for Pete Carroll in front of the 12s?
It would have been amazing. You know, I didn't get a chance to play in a new stadium. This is one thing that I do regret. But when we came in, it was a team that was talented, but it was very young and just needed some veteran leadership at the time. And, you know, they got it going. And Pete Carroll, man, it was amazing. You know, it really tells you that a coach and a quarterback can really make the difference. And Russell Wilson has made a difference on their team, and they had a lot of success. But Mike Holmgren has some too, even leading the Seahawks to a Super Bowl. So it was a lot of fun in Seattle. I just had to get used to the cold and the rain. I wasn't quite used to it. I was used to the cold, but the rain was a different story for me.
Well, and that ties right into my question, my first question for you, LaVon, and thank you again for joining us. You talked about, you know, just what an impact the quarterback can have. And, you know, we're seeing so many of these dual threat quarterbacks kind of take over the NFL now. And of course, you played with one of the original dual threat quarterbacks in Cordell/Stewart. I'm just kind of curious about what you can tell us about, you know, playing with him and practicing against him? And then how do you think that a linebacker of your size and your physicality, how would you be able to handle some of the dual threat quarterbacks that we're now seeing, especially in the NFC West, the guy like Kyler Murray, who's got to be like trying to, you know, tackle the Roadrunner or something.
You know, before Cordell became Slash, they would put him on the practice, or not the practice squad, but he would be on the scout team, and he would absolutely eat us up. And we had a really good defense, and we could not handle that guy. And somebody on the higher up said, we got to play him. He's an incredible weapon. And I saw it really back then. We had backs who were kind of statue quarterbacks who stood in the pocket. And, you know, they were great passers, but you didn't really worry about them really escaping the pocket or anything like that. But when you have a quarterback who can escape the pocket, who can also make the throws, it makes it tough on a defense. Now, a guy of my size, I would hope that I would have adjusted to the time. I think back in my era, I really didn't have to. I was a unique player back then with my size and being able to move the way I move. I will hope that, you know, as everything goes along in life, that I probably could have still handled it at maybe 260, 270 pounds, being the athlete that I was. Probably, you know, getting any bigger, probably not. But I think I would have adjusted, just like I think any pro athlete, if you put them in any era, they would be able to adjust to the style of football. So I don't know if you put a 270, 280-pound linebacker in there today and tell them to do it, but I think I've been capable of getting it done.
You were one of the best players in the 90s, so not going to put that past you. It would have been exciting to see what that would have looked like. I guess maybe we can test it out on Madden, but that's a perfect segue to my next question here, because obviously the game, as you mentioned, has changed so much, even from late 90s, early 2000s, to what we're seeing on the field on Sundays. How does the hybridization of defense in college football impact the linebacker position and the transition that has to be made going to the pros? You've got a unique perspective, not only have been being a great player, but also coaching in the NFL and the college level as well.
You know, I've always believed in the hybrid player. I always believed that you get a guy who's really a great athlete or a good player at one position, and if you can move them, and if they're a good athlete, they can adjust. I always believed in safeties coming down and playing linebacker. Or in my case, I was an outside linebacker in college. I never played inside backer, and moved me to a position where I didn't have to be as athletic. So I believe in, you know, taking guys and even wide receivers and moving to defensive backs, which you guys in Seattle had with Sherman. I think that is what you have to do on defense, because if you can't match up, then you're going to be in trouble. If you have the normal size inside linebacker, you're asking him to cover the tight ends that are basically power fours now, it's going to be tough. If you're telling, you know, if you're saying the DB back in the day to cover these basically shooting guards who can get up and jump and go get the ball, it's going to be trouble. So you got to get athletes who can compete with the athletes on the other side of the ball. So traditionally, when you look at a position, you got to get past that. You got to go look at the player. And it's got to be somebody who can see it in the future, the bigger picture, and say, could we move this guy who may not be a great safety in the NFL, but be a really good linebacker in the NFL? Let's take a chance, man. You got to put him on. You have to move him around a little bit.
Well, exactly. And that's one of the things that, you know, that I certainly remember about watching you play, is just being a phenomenal athlete at just a different size than everybody else at the linebacker position. But I also remember watching you at Clemson and thinking, this is a guy who just, in my opinion, screamed kind of first round pick. And of course, you wound up being a second round pick. You cited Richard Sherman, who of all the players I've ever covered, is one of those guys that absolutely had that big chip on his shoulder, that he wound up being a fifth round selection. Did you play with a chip on on your shoulder because that you were not selected in the first round? Do you think the teams or that players use that to try and motivate them?
I think some players absolutely use that. Hey, you guys didn't pick me earlier. That wasn't really my drive to say, put a chip on my shoulder. I just wanted to be the very best I could possibly be. That was my whole driving point. It wasn't about proving anybody wrong. It was really basically just solidifying that I was a guy that can play in the NFL. And moving from the outside position, which I was so accustomed to in college, and moving to inside, you know, that was significant for me. And then also for me, I'm going to tell you the biggest challenge for me was really calling the huddle and being in front of the huddle. That was different for me. And it really kind of had to change my style of play, because when I was in college, man, I was an enthusiastic kind of player, jump around, pump with the fans. But when I moved inside, I realized how much responsibility it was to play that position. Therefore, I had to change my style of play. You know, I couldn't be the guy who celebrated as much. I had to be more the responsible one. And I like that. It was a different feel for me. So to answer your question, I didn't necessarily have a chip on my shoulder. I just wanted to be the very best I could be. And I had a challenge from changing from one position to another position. Do I think guys use that? I think they do. But, you know, a lot of times it sounds like a WWE promo when they talk about I got a chip on my shoulder, or, you know, they bypass me. Man, you're like in the one percentile of all the millions of football players who play. So getting drafted or even being in a free agent, you are pretty good. You're not being overlooked. A lot of times, I think in the draft, you know, I definitely was a first rounder type caliber, but if you can get me in the second round, why don't you get me in the second round from a business standpoint? So I understand that. So guys who say, well, they overlooked me. No, they didn't overlook you. They just probably knew that I can get you later, you know? So why not get you later? Why not wait to get a valuable person? So I think that's how the draft should be run. Your first round pick should be thought of as maybe future Hall of Famers. Your second round pick are really all pros, solid starters, and you go down from that standpoint. So when players say that, I kind of laugh, because I'm like, man, you know how many people would die to be in your spot right now? So, but when you're young like that, you don't really have a big picture perspective. So that's kind of how I sum that up.
That is an interesting perspective. And I'm glad you pointed out that, you know, we are talking about 20, 21, 22 year olds. And so sometimes that type of perspective evades them until they've been in the league for a little while. But let's talk this upcoming draft. The Clemson Tigers coming off another fantastic season, getting into the college football playoff. A little different year this year, obviously. Vast majority of Clemson's notable prospects are offensive players. Seattle's only got 3 draft picks, but I've had a chance to watch a lot of Clemson's games, and they could use another receiver in Seattle, believe it or not. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett could use another sidekick, and Amari Rodgers and Cornell Powell are 2 players that have jumped out to me in the pre-draft process. Covering Clemson, having a chance to see this team out there, the success they've had, what are the biggest strengths for those 2 players? And in your opinion, which one do you think would be a better fit next to Metcalf and Lockett catching passes from Russell Wilson?
Well, I really like both of those guys, but if you're talking about a guy that I feel that's going to be a steal for anybody who gets him, it's Amari Rodgers. This kid is a workhorse. He can catch all the balls. He can run patterns very well. He has great speed. He's kind of built like a running back in a lot of ways. So in the open field, man, he's dynamic. So I think anybody who gets Amari is going to be pleasantly surprised of how good of a wide receiver he really is. And I think people have been sleeping on him. You know, he got hurt the year before, but if you look at his tape, you see some explosive plays. that he can make. I've seen him catch a little swing pass and he takes it all the way 80 yards for a touchdown. Whether you're in the ACC or not, man, that's pretty impressive. The Notre Dame game, you see him take a just basically run a nine route and just really does a good job of getting inside the DB and makes it a really nice pass for Trevor Rogers. So I really like both of those guys, but I really think Amari is going to make a difference on someone's team. And with him, Russell Wilson, you know, you look at him probably late second round.
Okay, last question for me. Of course, we're going to be looking at this from a Seahawk perspective, and the Seahawks are going to be nowhere near being able to draft a player like Trevor Lawrence or the dynamic running back Travis Etienne. I am curious about your thoughts about either of those two players. But one thing that Seattle, Russell Wilson has talked about this himself, that he wants more offensive linemen. And you got a good one in Jackson Carman there. And so I was kind of curious about if you want to give any opinions on the superstars, Lawrence and Etienne, would love to hear that as well. But again, Jackson Carman or any other players from Clemson that you think are not getting enough attention, bang the table for, that you believe are guys that might be available on day two or three that you think the Seahawks fans should be excited about.
I think Jackson Carman is a guy who is very intriguing as an offensive lineman, came into Clemson very, you know, with a lot of stars and, you know, really actually played 2 years, was a solid left tackle. I don't know if he's quite there, but I think with maybe 1 or 2 years, he can be a very solid player. Smart guy, athletic guy, a guy who can move. I think that you can take him probably can take him later on and be a guy that's like, you know, we can develop this guy to be a solid offensive lineman.
Levon, we greatly appreciate having the chance to chat with you, your insight on your career, how the game is changing, of course, Clemson's prospects. Where can our listeners catch your podcast?
Oh, wow. I don't really know, to be honest with you, because my co-host pretty much handles everything, but I'm sure if you can go Clemson, you know, Believe, you go into Believe Podcast, you can find us. So, you know, just look at Levon Kirkland and, you know, put in that as your search and that's where you find us. So thank you for catching me with a question I didn't know about. I appreciate that.
Hey, I can add that to my resume here. I got Levon Kirkland tricked on my podcast. Anyway, we greatly appreciate having the chance to chat with you. And we'll definitely have to touch base if one of those players ends up with the Seahawks. We greatly appreciate it. Take care and stay safe.
All right. You do the same. Thank you.
Thank you for your perspective. It was awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Audacy app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on tomorrow's show, I'm going to break down key athletic testing and measurable thresholds for centers and defensive tackles as we draw closer to the 2021 NFL Draft. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.